If you're enjoying this podcast, please leave us a review and tap the follow button so that you never miss an episode.
Happy Monday, everyone. Welcome to the best night of the week, in my personal opinion. Welcome to RFRX. I am joined tonight by resident guest speaker over and over again, who decided to make his debut as a co-host. Welcome, David.
Well, thank you very much. I'm here with the power now. As a presenter, I have none. So, yeah.
Listen, y'all better behave or David will put the smackdown on your butt. It's going to happen.
Oh, yeah.
You better behave.
Yeah.
Because we have serious things to talk about. And if you're not being kind, he's going to kick your butt. It's just going to be a thing. Kick your internet butt.
Former Bible college graduate, so I know how to bring the fire and brimstone.
And you also know, and you also work out. So
yeah, not as much as I should.
I'm sure you're above me. I do walks. So I walk. I walk. Yeah. I can walk very well. So
I mean, we get you places.
How was your week, David?
It was excellent. Lots of therapy. So fancy
for you or
thought.
For others?
Well, I mean, there's that whole thing you learn from your clients, I guess. But no, lots of clients. So fancy thing. Lots of people out there need to talk to somebody. Who knew?
So emotional support and money.
Right.
So that's great. I approve.
You have to do what you love.
Let me introduce our guests. Let's get this thing rolling. Dr. Kara Griffin. So those of you who have been here before will recognize her as our online programming director and main host of our RFRX talks. So she has also been raised as a fundamentalist Christian, but left the faith in college to pursue their lifelong passion for learning and appreciating rather than condemning the diversity of humans and other animals we share our planet with. They hold a master's degree in dispute resolution and conflict management and a PhD in anthropology. Kara has worked as a hostage negotiator, mediator, and crisis communication trainer. Kara enjoys volunteering with secular organizations that support other people who have experienced judgment, repression, trauma, or other struggles related to their involvement with religious ideology. Again, Kara serves as our wonderful online programming director and hosts these talks so they can become 20% cooler, as along with our other wonderful co-hosts and volunteers. So welcome, Kara. I would have an applause thing, but we don't have that. So
it's a round of applause. A round of applause.
Stamps. We do stamps.
Round. Oh, excellent. Thank you. It's an excellent introduction. I appreciate all the applause and snaps and hand waves. Glad to be here. As I often am on Monday evenings, but I am super excited to be here on this side of it. And I am so pumped that we have new, freshly minted co-host David with us this evening. Thank you for joining our cabal.
Thank you for inviting me.
This is David's baptism of fire.
Yes. I mean, does it remove the baptism of water that I had before?
It does.
Cancel out.
We do that at the excursions. We do unbaptisms there.
Yeah, nice. I will buy you. I got unbaptized at Free Flow, and I will get a rubber stamp of a pentagram to put on your forehead to do unbaptisms. It will be a thing.
Yeah. Come to the fall excursion. Get unbaptized. just say.
That's our tagline.
We'll see what happens. But anyway, yes, thank you for having me on. I am super excited to be here and to talk with y'all. And I just thought that maybe it would be a good time to have another discussion. I know we've talked about similar topics before, but talking about managing difficult conversations is something that definitely comes up a lot. in my life, and there's a lot going on in the world right now that has prompted people to be having some pretty difficult conversations with friends, family members, random people on the interwebs, and so on. And so I thought we could talk about that again tonight. So I am happy for this to be interactive too. So if you have questions or scenarios you want to discuss or anything like that, throw them in the chat and we'll talk about them. Because I'm noticing from the poll results that difficult
conversations. Should we rewatch the poll?
Yes,
so everybody can look at it.
Let's show the poll results.
All right, let's show the poll results. Look, I'm showing it.
Yes, excellent.
I can hit buttons, everybody.
Well done, well done. This is why Helen is a host. That and, you know, 20% cooler.
So,
go ahead.
Do you want me to go ahead and read back the poll results and you can respond, Kara, in the proper way that we do things?
Yes. We stand on formality here.
Okay.
Please proceed.
Yeah, we're very professional. So in our poll, how difficult do you find having religious conversations? And the winner at 36% was somewhat difficult. So, but it was a close, it was only, the second one is only extremely difficult by 32%. So that's not too much of a jump between the two. So
almost 80% of people selected either extremely difficult, very difficult, or somewhat difficult. So
you
it sounds
math.
Like it's difficult. Yeah.
All right. And then number two, do you actively seek out opportunities to have such conversations? Never. So some of you are, majority of you are timid to have these conversations, which is completely understandable. And then 36% said not often. So that's a good portion of our audience.
Yeah. Again, close to 80%, about 80% never or not often.
I'm very curious.
About these results.
11% said yes frequently. So you're actively seeking these things out. Yes, I want to have the difficult conversations. And awesome for you, because these are not easy conversations to have. How productive do you find such conversations when they do sometimes productive at 46%. So that's in the upper range, and not productive at all. So, and then even nobody said very productive. No one. They were nope. So that's understandable. And then the most important question is that the favorite fictional language was Elvish.
Interesting. That
as it should be.
Okay.
Exactly. Where are my Tolkien fans?
I mean
yes, I was going to say Klingon, but you know, I didn't get to vote because I'm a host. It's rigged.
So now we're at 20% with the Klingon.
Yes, thank you.
David, what were you going to vote? And what is your favorite fiction?
I'd have to go with Elvish.
All the Tolkien nerds.
Yeah, I'm even a fan of the Rings of Power Amazon show. I mean, come on, this was,
it was kind of rigged. It was my idea, so it was kind of rigged.
I mean, there is that.
I know. Ooh, our audience.
Well, we didn't exclude any languages because we had that option of something else right in the chat.
So I do remember the people that said Tuscan.
Because
it's not spoken a lot except in The Mandalorian, so thumbs up to you people.
I mean, the Fremen from Dune, sign language.
Yep.
I mean, come on, there's that.
Absolutely.
Okay, so we're gonna now actually get into the meat of this discussion because we're adults.
Yes. Yeah. And all that long poll is to say that it seems like these conversations are difficult. Talking about religion is one of those things that, you know, we say don't bring up at the dinner table or on a date or whatever, because it often ends in shouting or shutting down or whatever, you know, someone's response to stressful communication situations is. And so let's talk about what we can do about that. I can't promise that it will be something that can be easy. It's a difficult conversation, but I think we can try to go over a few things that might help it to be a little bit less stressful and help it to be a little bit more productive, which is, you know, one of the things people mentioned that they did not find it to be very productive. So maybe we can help a little bit with that, and then we'll have some Q&A and interactive time. So let us know if you have questions, and I'll try to go over some tips and ideas that I have learned through my experience and training in conflict and crisis communications, as well as, you know, plenty of mistakes that I have made along the way. And, you know, one of the best things about talking about how to have productive conversations when you're, you know, supposed to be an expert is that every time you screw up, people are like, aren't you supposed to be an expert? Yes. And I suck at this. So, you know, welcome to life as a human. So that's just
expertise is just sucking better than everybody else.
Yes. I just suck more dramatically.
Yeah.
The sign that you're an expert that you recognize how much you don't know.
Right. Yeah, that's pretty much it. So, you know, please don't expect that I'm going to be able to tell you how to make it not be hard to talk with other people, but we can try to talk about how to make it suck less, which is a little bit of a step. So a couple of things that I wanted to bring up, first of all, was deciding whether or not to even have these conversations. I know a lot of people mentioned in the poll that you try to avoid these conversations at all costs, or, you know, only have them seldomly. And that's not necessarily wrong. And I would actually love to hear in the chat some of the reasons that y'all might decide to have a conversation like this, because, you know, there are probably some reasons that are really good ones to pursue, and there may be some others that are not likely to result in a productive outcome. And so I had three sort of factors that I wanted to go over that I try to take in consideration when I'm thinking about whether this is a conversation that needs to be had. And the first question I want to start with, especially in the current, you know, kind of political climate that we're in, is it safe to have this conversation? If you are thinking that you might be having a conversation with someone about a religious topic or something to do with your non-belief, or an issue that, you know, has to do with religion, maybe it's about your identity as a queer person, or you're coming out as a non-believer in a particularly religious community or environment or anything like that. If you expect that that is going to result in you being unsafe, in any kind of violence happening, triggering trauma, or something like that, I would say consider not having that conversation and instead setting boundaries with that person about what kinds of conversations you are willing to have with them.
You know what it's like to journey out of a once cherished belief. Maybe you were devoutly religious, escaped a cult, or perhaps you simply navigated out of some very difficult days, and now you'd like to help someone else do the same. Recovering from Religion is a wonderful support organization for people who feel confused, troubled, and alone as they come to grips with the possibility that they no longer hold a religious belief, or that they risk losing everything if they're honest with themselves and others about their journeys. These people need our help, and Recovering from Religion needs yours. RFR is seeking volunteers. Perhaps you're formerly religious, or you have a specific skill set like speaking a foreign language. Maybe you're just a good listening ear. The RFR Volunteer Training Program will help you translate those abilities into critical assistance, encouragement, and support for the men, women, and youth who contact RFR every day from all over the world. You can relate. You can understand. And you can make their journeys easier. Join the team at Recovering from Religion and remind someone else that they are not alone and someone is here to help. To find out more, click the volunteer tab at recoveringfromreligion.org.
If any, and setting boundaries just means basically negotiating with them what is okay for us to do in this relationship. And we have had some talks about that before. I want to point out that we had a really good talk on boundaries by Rebecca Williams a couple of years ago. And we also had a great talk about this by David around the holidays, specifically when you're trapped with your family members, perhaps for an extended period of time, and you need to navigate these things. So I definitely want to drop the links to both of those in the chat, because sometimes maybe the answer is let's set a boundary, let's not have a conversation about this topic, and that may be the correct answer,
especially when alcohol's involved.
Yeah. Absolutely. Picking the right time is important too. So is it safe is the first question. If it's not, just stop there. You know, we don't have to have conversations about everything. So definitely check those resources. But the next thing that I think is important to think about is my plan for this conversation realistic? In other words, what is your goal for this talk that you're about to have? And is that likely to happen? For example, is this basically just something that you want to go on a rant about with a person that you're frustrated with? Or is this going to be an actual dialogue that is going to involve mutual respect and learning and understanding from both people? And I would say, listen, this is the part where I tell you all the times that I did this wrong. I've had a lot of those conversations where I just wanted to let someone know how incorrect they were, and not one of those was productive. I know you're shocked. not one time did that end well. So maybe that's a time to consider doing something like writing it down, or telling it to a friend, or speaking with your mental health professional who you found on the Secular Therapy Project from seculartherapy.org.
Like David.
Shout out.
Yeah, so call David with that instead.
Wait, I don't think I like where this went.
Yeah, right? You
know. Yeah. We're just going to call David and be like, right. Hey, religion, family, help me out.
Yeah, be like, just call David, just go vent.
So on a less funny idea of this conversation, though, is that when you're going through the deconversion process, especially when you're at the beginning, you have this urge to share your like newfound discovery, like, oh, you know, I'm letting go of all the BS and I would like to get my family involved in this. Like I want to help them. How do you navigate that between what you want to do versus what is beneficial for yourself and the people that you care about?
Yeah, that's a great question. And we'll get into a little bit more about kind of some steps you can do for that. But yeah, I think so the question is basically like, how do you navigate this to where it's something that you feel like you need to get off your chest, you need to talk about it, but you know that there's going to be some resistance to it. Is that what you're asking?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great point, because it's not in that case necessarily a rant, but I would say considering how is this important to the relationship between you and the other person? Is there something happening around this that you need them to understand or to do differently or to set a boundary around it? Or is it just a question of, I need you to know that I'm right, and I need you to admit that you believe in something that's not true? That second one, maybe not as helpful to the relationship. But the first part, I mean, there may be a lot of instances where, you know, it's not something that they necessarily want to hear from you, but it may be something that is necessary for you in order to continue on with the relationship. And in that case, you may need to find a way to bring it up. So we'll kind of talk about setting the stage for doing that.
Okay, but so yeah, I'm just planting a seed.
Yeah, it's almost later. Like you're psychic.
I know I am, which is pre-knowing.
Yes.
So we're all a little psychic.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So yeah, I would just say, like, think about it. Like, if, like, we hear that example a lot when people are like, well, you know, if it's, you know, your elderly grandmother is on her deathbed, like, do you really need to come out to her as a non-believer at that time and let her know that you think she wasted her life, you know, worshiping a god that doesn't exist? And, you know, maybe you don't need to have that conversation. Right. That would be one where we could probably just let that go. But okay, so the final question that I would ask is this worth it? And what I mean by that is this an occasion where making ourselves understood as being right or correct is perhaps less important than being kind or respectful of the other person? You know, we don't necessarily have to all agree on everything. If the relationship is important, then I would say that's what you should be focusing on. And if you're talking about having a conversation like this with someone with whom your relationship is not important, well, that makes it a lot easier. We probably don't need to have the conversation. You can probably just let that go or not care how it turns out. That's a lot easier. But I'm assuming we're talking about conversations with people who you want to continue to have a relationship with. And in that case, it does matter whether it's going to be done in a way that is respectful to both people. And you can respect people without respecting their beliefs. I know a lot of people, okay, this is my take on this. I know some people say things like, you know, all beliefs and ideas deserve respect. I think some beliefs and ideas are extremely stupid and I do not respect them. I think some ideas and beliefs are harmful, but the people who have those beliefs deserve respect as people. So we can probably start with that and then move on to the beliefs next, but we don't get to the beliefs without taking care of people. So, okay, with those three things,
so Kara,
it sounds
like what you're going through so far is basically acknowledging the nature of the relationship that you have with the person. I mean, that's what starts this, that provides the context, that provides the impetus. I mean, if it's some Joe Schmo that you don't even meet, like, why are you going to engage in this? But if you want to further the,
you could engage in arguments on Twitter, but why?
Yeah. You know, I know a lot of people that get a great deal of enjoyment out of that. And if that's what you like to do, you know, go do you, I guess. But I would suggest that may not be the kind of conversation that is going to result in necessarily changing that person's mind on the other side of Twitter. But no. I don't know. That's up to you. To me, that's extremely stressful, and that's the kind of conversation I like to avoid. But that's just me. But let's assume, yes, that we're talking about a relationship that is important to you. And yeah, to your point, David, that is the context. The context of this is I want to have a conversation with someone who is important to my life in some way. And in order for that to be productive, that has to be first and foremost when we're getting ready to have the conversation, is that we're preserving or managing or setting boundaries around a relationship that we want to keep in some shape or form. Maybe we don't want it to stay the way it is currently. Maybe we want there to be some kind of change or alteration in it, but it's a relationship that is important. And so that means the person is important.
So do you recommend like setting boundaries even before you go into a conversation, so everybody's kind of understanding where people are coming from, so this way there's not certain boundaries that are crossed during the conversation?
Yes, I think to some extent that is important. And that is actually kind of the first point I was going to make, which is, yeah, picking the right context to have the conversation, the right time, the right place. It may be helpful to let the person know in advance what you want to talk about so that they don't feel like you sprung it on them and they're completely unprepared and caught off guard. You don't have to make it, you know, formal and scary, but, you know, maybe just, hey, would this be a good time to talk about, you know, whatever? We've had this discussion before. I thought I could share some of my ideas with you and learn from you, you know, something like that. I'll give you an example of a time I did this extremely poorly, so don't do like I did, which is the time I came out as non-binary to a family member during an argument in our family group chat about that person posting anti-trans memes on Facebook, and then proceeded to explain in detail with citations all of the reasons why the biblical concept of two binary genders is inadequate to describe my experience and incorrect. And, you know, as you might expect, everyone came away from that with a full and complete understanding of my identity and wanted to use my pronouns. Just kidding.
That's
really what happened?
No, that is not really what happened. We don't use that group chat anymore.
I'm like, wow, I want to live in your universe.
Yeah. So that was bad timing. That was not the right time and place for that. You know, it matters. So giving people a chance to be ready for the conversation and making sure you're ready for the conversation. don't bring it up when you're already in an argument. That's not going to be productive. So, you know, it happens. But we can try to avoid it. Okay, so a couple of other... Thank you, Glenda. It was rough. A couple of other tips that I have found really, really useful that I haven't always expertly done, but that help and work really well when I do remember to do them, are some of those basic tactics, like talking about I, not you. This is really hard for me, and it's hard for a lot of people, because we tend to assume other people's intentions. When something happens to us that is negative and upsetting and distressing, it's really easy to think, wow, that person said something really hurtful to me. They meant to do that. And they're sexist or racist or homophobic or, you know, whatever. And it's really easy to then say something like, well, here's why your religious beliefs are wrong. They're sexist and racist and homophobic, and you are too. And wouldn't you know it, that doesn't turn out to really convince a lot of people that of the error of their ways. A better way to bring that up is instead to put it on yourself and say, this is the effect that X, Y, or Z is having on me. Like, I have been feeling whatever as a result of this. You know, I'm feeling ignored, or I don't feel safe for the following reasons, or whatever the case may be. And you're gonna really just completely avoid triggering that defensiveness in the other person, so that they might actually want to hear from you, because they're able to hear what's going on with you, because they didn't, instead of that, hear what's wrong with them. Because if the sentence has anything to do with what you did wrong and the impact on me, all they're gonna hear is what you did wrong. They're gonna miss that second part about the impact it had on you, because people are selfish and that's how our brains work. So David can back me up on that more, but.
Quite, no, it's a beautiful way of having a conversation.
Yeah, just explain what's completely wrong with the other person, and then
absolutely,
they'll agree with you.
Yeah. Start with a character flaw and go downhill from there.
Yeah.
I always respond well when people tell me my character flaws and how I'm wrong about things. Like, I always change my mind. And
it's how,
like,
I do therapy. I start with, you're an idiot, and by the end of it, they're cured. I mean, it's brilliant. Yeah.
Science. This is science.
This is science, because people definitely don't dig in or get super defensive about things at all. Because emotions are completely rational.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yes. And to Rob's point, absolutely. List the 15 logical fallacies that they just used. Yeah, that will definitely make them realize the error.
Like, remember, you're just the moving Latin the goalpost. Oh, yes. Okay.
Yeah. Add a meme. No, and actually, I want to give a book recommendation at this time, because I love book recommendations. But one of my favorite books on just, like, having some techniques and tips to make conversations flow more smoothly is called Wouldn't You Know It? Difficult Conversations. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to drop the link to that in the chat. If you want to read a book about this, that's the one. That's it. I will say this. I recommended this book to a family member who I had been having difficult conversations with, and it actually did help. So, hey.
Is this Boghossian's book?
Yeah, this one is.
Or is it different?
This is, I think it's Stone. I want to say it's Stone. Yeah, this is Stone, Patton, and Heen.
Oh, okay.
Nice. I always admire, like, there's some really good books out there, and I'm always like, wow, I know another really good book I won't read. I know my YouTube video, give me the Clip Notes version, and then I talk to people and try to absorb knowledge that way. Like, me reading, my ADHD will not lab books.
Oh, you know what? What I love about this book is that there are a lot of people that have made like worksheets and summaries about this book that you can look up and get the gist of it without having to read the whole thing. And I'm gonna drop a link to one of them in the chat.
That's nice. That's for my brain.
Yeah.
Well, it looks like Fisher worked with William Ury.
Yes.
Famous negotiator. Yeah. So
yes.
Okay.
Yeah, nice. Fisher and Ury are a lot of the background to most of the tips and tools that I'm giving today. So pretty much anything by them. Getting to Yes is another great one. I love that. It's technically like a negotiation book, but it's also just about good strategies for having conversations that don't trigger people's defensiveness and things like that. Mm-hmm. So yeah, anything by Fisher and Ury, absolutely. Yeah, the Harvard Negotiation Project had a lot of good books come out on this. Yeah. And as a result of that, a lot of business schools made a lot of like spreadsheets and PowerPoints about it. So you can find the Cliff's Notes versions of all these on the interwebs.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I got introduced to Ury through his the Third Way.
Yes, the Third
Way. Which was,
Yes, excellent. Excellent for mediating.
Nerdgasm for the win.
Yes, I love that. I'm adding that one to our list of resources for this this event. I'm pulling it up now and dropping it in the chat.
This is why I hang around with smart people.
Yeah, well, you know. It's okay. That was the wrong book. I almost put the wrong one. Okay, there are about a million books that called The Third Way. I'm gonna have to get the right one here in a minute. But I'll add that at the end. Okay. Oh. But anyway, yes, talking about me, not you. Great tactic. I recommend it. And along with that, so something I have found, and this is just my experience, let me know if yours is different. A lot of times with these conversations with family members, especially about religion, there's this element of blaming that can come in, like, because you raised me this way, this, that, or the other thing happened, or this is causing you to behave in a way that is harmful, or you did this because, you know, you believe in whatever, you tricked me, you lied to me, I am angry at all of the things that you did. One of the best ways to make sure your conversation is not productive is to start by blaming and shaming the other person. So that's a good thing to avoid as well. And something that I have found works a lot better than that is to talk about all of our contributions to the current situation, not whose fault it is. And consider that everyone has had a contribution to the interaction that you're currently having. You know, it's not 100% one person's fault, even if maybe they believe something that you understand to be 100% wrong. But what is the contribution? What is my contribution? What is your contribution? How can we change our interaction? Is probably going to be more palatable than this is all your fault. Look what you did to me. Like, you know. And I'm saying this like it sounds obvious, but listen, I'm telling you these things because I've screwed up every single one of these. So I'm trying to.
Well, I think it's also.
Same, right there with you.
Yeah.
I think it's also for people to remind themselves too that though you're the one that's kind of seeing the man behind the curtain, your family members may have not seen the man. And to have that patience and understanding to go, you've moved beyond this belief or bad idea, but your mother, your father, your uncle, your aunt, your siblings may have not seen the man behind the curtain, and that information is a part of their identity. That man is a part of their identity. And so understanding that is part of having that sympathy and empathy for your family member, that they haven't arrived where you are.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that can be hard. I think that can be hard because it's not an intentional deception. Mm-hmm. It is, they thought they were doing what was best to make you a good person.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And anybody who has previously been religious and then is not anymore can probably identify with that, you know, probably at the time that you had a certain religious belief, you weren't believing it because you thought it was bad and harmful and incorrect and was going to hurt everybody. I mean, I'm just guessing. That's probably not the case. And that's probably not the case with the other person too. So yeah, not assuming those bad intentions again. Yeah. Giving people the benefit of the doubt. Yes, good. Do that. For sure. And so that reminds me actually of another book that I wanted to mention. David, have you read Dignity by Donna Hicks?
Oh, I know the name, but I've not. No, haven't read that one.
Ooh, Watch okay. Manitou is Goodreads list.
Quit. Okay. Yes. Okay. Good. I finally got to add a book to David's reading list.
Oh, heck yeah!
Now's a competition.
Been trying for months.
What are we doing here? What are we doing?
Yes, and it's called Dignity, and basically she has worked for years in conflict resolution internationally, all over, and she actually has a whole model of conflict resolution based on this concept of dignity. And if you kind of respect and build up other people's dignity and your own, that you're going to be able to solve a lot of the problems that are happening in the relationship, because oftentimes what people get really dug in on in these disputes is more to do with feeling that their personal dignity, sense of self-worth is being attacked or disrespected or disregarded. And if you can actually instead show respect for that, for both people, and insist on your own being respected too, that you may be able to sidestep a lot of the things that will end up derailing conversations otherwise. So I highly recommend that.
I have a 100%. Question.
Yeah, go for it, Helen.
So we usually say that, like, this is kind of what I tell people, like, if you want to engage in these conversations with family members, go have at it, but it's going to be a lot of emotional turmoil. Do you recommend people that want to have this conversation try it with people that they are not as a close emotionally attached to first before they dive into, like, let's say their uncle?
Yes. Something you could even do too is actually practice the conversation with someone else first, with how you think you might bring it up, the types of things you want to say, and actually have someone give you feedback on how you're presenting it, what's going on. I was going to mention a little bit later too, but I'll bring it up now, about even your nonverbals that you're doing while you're talking about this. You know, your body language says a lot. Your facial expressions say a lot. I have gotten feedback from multiple people that I apparently have a tendency to roll my eyes and make ugly faces when people are saying things that I find to be absurd. And I promise I don't mean to be doing it, but it's happening. And it, right off the bat, poisons the whole conversation. I have actually had family members stop mid-sentence before and say, "Are you gonna let me finish or not?" And I'm like, "What? I didn't say anything." And they're like, "Your face is saying it." And, you know, they're right. I didn't mean to be doing that, but it says a lot. If it looks like you're not paying attention, it looks like you're not open to hearing from someone, they can tell. Turns out, even if you can't.
Never reveal your power source.
If you're right. Right.
That's a very toxic saying from the manosphere, but.
Yeah, but yeah, absolutely. Like, practice that with a friend, with somebody that isn't such a high stakes relationship, and ask them for feedback. Ask people for feedback while you're having this conversation, and, you know, don't try not to get too defensive about it. I denied for years that I was making ugly faces, but you know what? I was only deceiving myself. Oh. Everyone else could see it.
Trust me, I know that I try, but I'm always like,
I know.
Like, making faces, like.
I know. I can't do it. Yeah. So, you know, I make an effort to do it less. Hopefully that is appreciated.
I try. I'm like, uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Right. Right.
Because you really. Flat.
Yeah. You can't fake sincerity. I mean, I don't know. I'm not good at faking sincerity. There may be people who are able to do it, but generally speaking, people can't tell. But, yeah. You know.
You can only fake it if the other person isn't paying attention.
Right.
So,
right. Yeah. So it's gotta be sincere. You have to really want to not make an ugly face while the other person is talking and work on not doing that. Yes. Nope. So anyway, there's that. Yeah. A couple of the other points, there's actually, from that Dignity book, that's another one that, you can find kind of short Cliff's Notes versions of online. That this Dignity model of conflict resolution is another link I'll put in the chat too, that you can find. It has a lot of tips for just, you know, recognizing and appreciating and supporting dignity in yourself and other people, and things to watch out for. A couple of points that I pulled out that I found particularly relevant for me, and hopefully they're helpful to other people, are this idea of not taking the bait. Like, if you are often having the same argument or the same conversation with a particular family member or person, they probably know what buttons to push to really get you upset, or at least that may be your perception of what they're doing. But don't take the bait. If you can help it, don't follow up with, oh, they've said that thing that they know really upsets me, let me follow suit. You know what? Let them behave badly if they're going to. You don't have to. One of the most useful things someone ever told me when I was doing my studies in conflict resolution, and I know this sounds like complete common sense, and it may be to some people, but it was not to me, was after several role plays where we were working through our conflict resolution skills, one of the coaches said to me, you know, Kara, you don't actually have to be provoked. When someone says something, you don't have to be provoked, right? Oh, for some reason that made me feel empowered to realize, oh, you know what? Actually, I can respond a different way. Let me go ahead and try doing that for a change. And guess what? That worked better. So there's
so
that.
So here's a question. And yeah, like, if David was hosting, was the guest tonight, I would ask him this too, but you're here, so I'm going to ask this question. Do yeah. you think knowing what triggers you is mm-hmm. something that's going to be super beneficial when you're having these conversations, especially like if we're having conversation about like religious traumas and yes. triggers, like knowing those things ahead of time? Because mm-hmm. I would have to imagine, like, if we're having a conversation about religion and like the concept of hell is particularly triggering to someone, maybe not have that conversation or be aware that this is a trigger for you before you have that conversation. Mm-hmm. Because when it comes up, you like, even though you're still having the emotional reaction, it might be a good idea going, oh, this is my emotion. It's not something that this family member is doing to me. It's just a trigger.
Yes, absolutely. And that might be a great time to take a break mm-hmm. from the conversation, or set a boundary and say, hey, you know what? I really don't want to talk about that today. Can we mm-hmm. go back and focus on this other piece of the conversation we're talking about, or whatever the case may be? Yeah, 100%. Because if you know that that is going to just send you, then yes, let's avoid that. Let's not talk about that. Let's draw a boundary around that. 100%. And it is perfectly okay to take a break and take a pause when you're having a difficult conversation. Maybe you didn't get to cover all of the points that you wanted to, but it's not gonna get better once you start going down this path of, you know, reacting negatively, and you're getting more and more angry and upset. Like, take a pause. It's okay to do that. Come back and finish the conversation later. Once you get triggered, don't, you know, keep shouting until it goes away. I say this from experience.
Somebody well, these the seem to. Yeah, I mean, these seem to really be coinciding, Kara, with, you know, the back to that, the dignity and mm-hmm. like the 10 essential mm-hmm. elements of dignity, which are from that link mm-hmm. that you shared earlier. And one of them being safety. Mm-hmm. And really checking in about how is this going to work? What yeah. is the outcome that is requested, which mm-hmm. or rather desired? And yep. how do I go about, you know, getting there? Yeah.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah.
One of our friends in the chat said, an emotional trigger is important to know for oneself. It is often indicates an unresolved issue that needs addressing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And it may or may not need addressing at this time with that person. Maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. But yeah, keeping strongly in mind the purpose of the conversation. What are you hoping to achieve? And keeping in mind that it's, if you begin with a commitment to respecting both people's dignity and that you want to have greater understanding for both of you, you're probably going to be in a better place than if you go in with the intention of, you know, I need to make sure that I convince them to agree with me that they were wrong about X. You know, that's probably not it. But if we can start with an attempt to get mutual understanding, a little bit more clarity, or maybe it's setting a particular boundary or getting clear on, I need them to understand this issue, or we need to talk about this particular behavior, and it's coming from a place of, we're gonna respect both people even if we don't agree, that's gonna lead you closer to productive versus not productive.
So this is, I was just having this thought that, like, when we're going through, like, if we're having conversations about, like, coming out of belief, mm-hmm. It's not just one conversation, but it feels like it is, because it's been seed after seed that was planted, and you started working through the arguments. And then when you get to the end of it, it feels like there's one or two conversations that, like, awakened your brain, and you're like, oh, you know what? I don't believe in this BS, but whatever it is anymore. It doesn't even have to be religious. It's a belief you could have had about yourself or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And I think that desire, because it feels like it was one conversation or two, that you think that, oh, if I just have this one conversation with my mom, she's not going to believe in God anymore, you know, or it's not going to believe that, you know, hell is internal punishment, or that I'm not a bad person because I live my life a certain way, you know, mm-hmm. like you're going to have this one conversation. I'm just wondering if that is just a perception we're having, because it feels like it was one or two conversations when really it was, you know, chipping at the stone wall that, you know, over and over again, you know, it's like the Shawshank Redemption, like, you know, it's years of, you know, getting to the tunnel to freedom, you know?
Yeah. And it may be that the thing that suddenly convinced you and, you know, caused the scales to fall from your eyes or whatever may not be the thing for them at all. And you may be saying, like, but listen, I discovered that it's not possible that all of the animals could have got on Noah's Ark. And, you know, now I'm an atheist. You know, that may not be it for them. that may not be convincing to them for whatever reason. And so just continuing to, you know, but I revealed the information to you. Why do you not agree with me 100%? Like, yeah, you're probably not going to just get there just that easily. But I have found, and I think the research backed me up on this, if you have the conversation with the intention of explaining yourself so that they understand you a little better, and also with the intention of hearing from them so that you understand them a little better, you're actually going to make more progress, because people tend to not listen to anything you say if they don't feel like you're listening to what they're saying. And so when we come into it with the, but listen, I found out that everything you believe is wrong, that kind of sets up a wall. So yeah, exactly. It's a pretty lofty goal to think, I'm going to have this one conversation with this person about how everything they've thought about their entire worldview is incorrect. And, you know, once I reveal this to them, they will suddenly change their mind and agree with me on everything. Like, that is probably not realistic. And so if we don't go in with that expectation, we might, you know, be able to have a conversation that feels less upsetting.
I'm sorry. I'm laughing at one of the people in the chat. Sorry. Could you repeat that? I couldn't hear over you, over how right I am.
Yeah, that.
And what's that old thing? It's like, my opinions may have changed, but not the fact that I am right.
Yeah.
It's like, how convenient.
I'm always right. It's not my fault all the mofos hasn't caught up with how right I am.
Yes. Oh, no. Yeah. And it's one of those things that we're all doing. We're all doing it at once. It's not like, you know, this is a thing that, you know, people who come out of religion are doing. This is just a thing people are doing. So, you know, and okay, so this brings me to my next point, which is, okay, what if I'm trying to do all of these things correctly? I'm trying to be respectful and, you know, take everyone's dignity into account and, you know, demand dignity for myself and also extend dignity to someone else. And I'm using the tips and I'm listening and I'm being patient and I'm not being provoked. And what if they're still acting terrible? Okay. So we've got a couple of options at this point. We can go back to the very beginning step in our flow chart, our conceptual flow chart here, which is set boundaries and, you know, maybe decide we're not going to continue having conversations. Or maybe that's not an option at this time. Maybe you have found yourself suddenly and unexpectedly in a heated conversation with someone that you care about, and everyone is shouting and crying, and we're in the middle of it now, or, you know, whatever. There was a misstep somewhere, you did everything right, but then things happened, you got triggered, you know, stuff happens. And now you're in the midst of this conversation with someone that you care about, and you want to keep having the conversation, but we're in a conflict at this point. What do we do? Okay, so I will share some tips for this. Again, if at any time, I just want to keep harping on this, you're having this conversation with someone and it is making you feel unsafe, just go ahead and exit the situation. That's perfectly fine. But let's talk a little bit about conflict de-escalation. Yeah, our conversation flowchart. Yeah, I have not watched the rehearsal. I need a link to that. So someone drop that in the chat, please.
Yeah, person in the chat that mentioned it, you need to drop a link down. You've been voluntold.
Yes, please do. Okay, so one of, I think, the best tools in our arsenals for conversations that have become, you know, conflicty is active listening. And I know that's a really boring answer and it's not exciting at all. And it sounds like you're not doing anything, but no, we call it active listening because you have to actually do things with it. So, okay, here's the deal. How should I put this? So there are some situations, there are a lot of different situations that active listening works really well in when it comes to conflict de-escalation. Some of them are more serious situations, like if we're talking about crisis communications, if you're going to go get trained to work on a suicide hotline, or for example, hostage or crisis negotiations and things like that. All of these same skills are what you learn. People often really underestimate the value and the effectiveness of some basic skills like active listening and building empathy and rapport. It turns out those same skills that we can be using in our day-to-day conversations are the same skills that hostage negotiators are using, that suicide prevention hotlines are using, that people who are dealing with very serious, emotionally distraught people in crisis are using. And there's a lot of professional experience around that. There's been a lot of research around it, and we can benefit from that by using some of these same tips and tactics in our own conversations, which sound a little squishy, but that's how conversations work. Basically, I'll go over a few points from what the FBI uses in their behavioral influence stairway model of basically getting from a point of having a conflict with someone that you do not have any kind of rapport or relationship with, to getting to a point where you might be able to actually have a conversation with that person and make recommendations and suggestions and requests of someone. So we have a little bit of time left, so I'll just briefly go over this. But guess what? The foundation to doing any of that is active listening. And the reason is that is how you're able to build empathy and rapport and trust with another person that you're in conversation with. So if you're having a conversation with a family member or a close friend, and maybe you find that they are repeating the same thing over and over again, they are yelling it at you, they are becoming very upset, what is likely happening is they're not feeling like you heard them. And so there are a handful of things we can do to actually help people feel heard. And that's going to accomplish a couple of things. The first thing it's going to accomplish is that their level of emotional excitement is going to be able to come down once they feel like they've been heard. And secondly, it's going to build a level of trust and rapport to where they're going to be willing to hear from you. And a lot of times, unfortunately, it can be really frustrating to come into a conversation knowing, okay, I am going to have to do a lot of work and use a lot of skills to listen to a person say a bunch of stuff that I don't believe, that I don't agree with, and they're going to rant at me. And then I'm hoping that in return, they'll listen to me. It's a big emotional investment. If you don't feel up to the task, don't have the conversation. Like, it's okay, you don't have to. But if you do decide to, here are some ideas for how to do active listening. Basically, active listening just means listening and responding in a way that lets the other person know that you have been listening and you are understanding what they're saying, rather than just waiting for your turn to talk. A lot of times when we're talking with people, we all do this, we're hearing them, we know what they're about to say, they're going on, we knew what they meant, two words into the sentence, and they've been talking for the last 95 seconds, and we're just ready to give our retort, and the whole conversation goes that way, and no one's learning anything. So that's not active listening.
This just happens with us that are neurodivergent and have ADHD brained. We're like, oh, I already know what you're going to say. Yeah. I want to talk now.
Yeah. It's normal. We all do it. And it's frustrating because then the other person is like, no, I said something really important. I don't think you heard me because I saw you thinking about your response. Like, they can see you doing it. So active listening is not doing that. It's actually taking the time to invest in listening to the other person until they're done, which might be a long time, especially if you're talking about something that is really emotional for that person, like you're challenging their belief system. You are telling them that you are no longer a part of that belief system. And in their mind, you may be saying, you know, I'm going to hell, or, you know, whatever the consequence of that may be in their mind. They may have an emotional response to that, and they may want to express that. And that may look like them talking for a while. And one of the best ways to show that you're listening is to let them go. Just wait. Let them say it. Let them get it all out. Don't start disagreeing with them while they're still talking. Like, don't do that eye roll thing that I do. Like, let them finish.
All right, let's face.
Yeah. Yeah. Let them get it all the way out, all the way done. And like, not like when they pause to take a breath and then jump in, like wait for them to pause and take a breath and finish. let them actually finish before you disagree. I cannot stress this enough because this is the part I mess up all the time, but you actually
let
them get all
the way done. I have to imagine that's hard with family members though, because you know them. So you're like, I already know what mom's going to say. She's going to say
that. You already know.
Yeah. It's just like, yeah, we all know what mom's going to say, but still you got to let mom talk. Cause
let her say it.
Mom's going to express mom stuff. And you just got to let mom do mom things.
Yes. Let them do it. Yeah. And that's a great question. What this is causing anxiety while they're saying it all. Yeah. I don't have a great solution for that other than just trying to remember that they're expressing their emotional reaction. It is not yours. It does not belong to you. You did not cause it. You are not responsible for it. That is their reaction. We're letting them have it. And it's theirs. And you don't have to be provoked. But yeah, there may be some particular techniques that different people find more helpful for remaining calm during that time. Yeah, that's probably going to vary. I find what is helpful for me when that's going on is to actually be reminding myself, like, this person is having a reaction. It doesn't have to be mine. I actually tell myself all the time, Kara, you don't have to be provoked. I found that piece of advice to be very useful. Other people might find different ones useful. David, were you going to say something?
You can choose to be provoked.
Yes.
which requires a lot of your active rational brain, which your emotional brain will go, but I feel provoked. It's like, yeah, but are you provoked?
Right. Yeah,
which is a different question and different brain state.
Yeah, I'm feeling something about this. I'm feeling angry. I'm feeling attacked. Okay, what do I have to do with that? Well, I don't necessarily have to do anything with that. I can keep listening and I can let this person finish talking. And then I can try to use some skills that I have learned to help us get to a productive resolution. So if you're able to stay in that headspace, awesome. If you're not, again, you don't have to have the conversation. It's okay to not have it. But trying to remain calm and let their reaction be their reaction and not let it glom onto you is key here. And then actually acknowledge what they're saying. Instead of going, yeah, we've heard this, we know you said this, like actually listen. And whether that means like nodding your head or saying, uh-huh, oh, really? But like sincerely, not like sarcastically.
Well, I think that's the hard part with family members and people that we're close to is because we know them so well.
Yeah.
And we have to remind ourselves that they're a human being. They're not just the role that they're in our lives, and to take a step back and go, let me actually hear you as a person that is not my mom or my dad or my sibling or my spouse. Like, let me just hear you from an almost an objective space and where you're coming from as an emotional, intelligent human being. Mm-hmm. And because that can be really hard when it's someone we're emotionally close to, because we just see them in their role and not see them as the full human being that they are.
Yeah, that's a really great point, because, you know, we started this by saying you're probably having this conversation with someone that you actually care about, that's important in your life. But we have a tendency to just kind of be like, oh, there they go again, saying that thing they always say. But like, I wouldn't talk to a stranger that way if they were, right, you know, getting really upset about something. I wouldn't be like, well, you always say that because you're a moron. Like, but, you know, sometimes stuff like that slips out with people that we're really comfortable with. And trying to not let that slip out goes a long way.
Also good to remember that all these things are applied to us as well. I mean, if at any point, yes, it's always about, well, you know, I understand that the other person is an emotional being that's getting caught up in the moment. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's just called othering. And now we come back to, yeah, what are we trying to build together?
Mm-hmm. Listen, David, I am 100% always rational, not emotional. I am a robot.
Yes. Yes. This is why
all the time. All the time.
Point out your logical fallacies and
right. Logical fallacies and facts and figures.
Yep. No, what can actually be really helpful, though, rather than pointing out logical fallacies, is if you can recognize the emotion that someone is expressing and correctly identify it, that can go a really long way in making them feel like you understood them. Mm-hmm. Being like, oh, wow, you're really frustrated with XYZ. And if you can, like, not telling them, you sound angry, you should be less emotional. not that. Not judging the emotion, identifying the emotion and recognizing, oh, so you were really sad when you found out that I didn't want to have my kids baptized into this religion, or, you know, you were really afraid that I was going to burn in hell forever, or whatever the case may be. Actually correctly identifying it and asking them if that's right and letting them tell you, yes, that's how I felt, or no, you idiot, that's what you took away from that 20-minute rant, you know. And it's okay if you got it wrong, it's just, they'll correct you. If you ask them if that's right, they will correct you if it's not right, and then you have to let them go again until they're done. And it may take a minute. And then try again. And it can really help if you actually then, once they're done, paraphrase what you learned, like say it back in their own words to show them that you understood that, you know, they were really afraid for their grandchildren's souls, you know, when they found out that you weren't taking them to, you know, this church service anymore. And that made them worry about, you know, whatever, what their neighbors were going to think and, you know, whether your kids were going to be in hell or whatever it is. And ask them if you got it right and see if you can get both the content of what they said and how it felt to them at the same time when you paraphrase it, like, so you felt this way because of, you know, whatever, you know, is that right? Did I get that correct? And if you're able to get it right and they're like, yes, people are usually like relieved if you get it right. They're like, yes, that's it. And that's how you know they're done. And then you can start. This takes a long time. So actually letting them get to that point and showing them that you understand and you're not judging, you're being empathetic. And again, empathy, well, not again, I didn't say this yet. Empathy doesn't necessarily mean that you agree. It doesn't have to mean you agree with them, but it does mean you understand and you are genuinely concerned or care about or interested in knowing about what they're thinking and feeling. You don't have to agree to empathize. But if they feel that you're empathizing and you're not judging, they're gonna be more willing to do that back to you. And so once you've done all of that, you may be able to get to that point in the conversation where you have built enough rapport with the person where they're actually gonna feel like listening to you because they feel like you listened to them and understood what they were saying. That second part is key. You listened and understood, and they felt like you understood and acknowledged. They're going to be more likely then to listen. And this is the point where you can express your thoughts and don't start out with, well, I heard everything you said and that's completely wrong, so let me tell you the truth. Like, not that. Not that.
How's it real, mom?
But get to that point where you heard them, you understood them, they feel like you heard and understood them. And I would now like to express to you, you know, something that is important to me, and tell the thing it is, whether it's a request that you want to make of them, like, hey, I really wish you would stop posting those transphobic memes on my Facebook, or I wish you would stop sending us all these invitations to come to church with you, or, you know, those kinds of things. This is the moment where you can express, again, we're talking about I statements, not what's wrong with them, not criticizing them, but what's going on with me, how I'm feeling about it, what I would like to happen. And this is the point where you can get that in and make it something simple and reasonable, not, I now want you to agree with me that everything you believe is false and you are stupid. But maybe it's something or, like, you know, I now
some kind of compromise, like, you know, like you're not going to go to church, but you'll come to Sunday dinner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This would be a great time for that, you know, and Here's the reasons why I have not been feeling comfortable going to church lately, you know, whatever it has to do with my sense of personal safety, or, you know, I've been having this question, or I have this disagreement with what's going on at that church service. And so I don't feel good about being there, but because I value your relationship with me and I do want to spend time with you, I will still come with you to whatever the dinner thing or whatever it is. And I want to do that because I value this relationship that we have. And I hope you can understand, you know, why I'm feeling unsafe or like I'm not being, having personal integrity or whatever it is, you know, by doing the church service or something like that. Yeah. This is the moment to insert that after you've spent like 95% of the time listening and acknowledging and doing your and not rolling your eyes and actually trying to understand and making sure you understood and making sure they understand that you understood. And then you have this like window of time to make yourself understood as well and get your request in. This is the time for that.
And I think it's in like, and I know you would have probably expressed this too, that this is not going to be one conversation. This is going to be probably several conversation of reiterating boundaries and trying to understand and getting to some sort of place of compromise, which is some people you're going to be able to get it to, and there are going to be people in your life that it's not even about religion or anything like that. You're not going to be able to reach a place of compromise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That's absolutely possible. Mm-hmm. And it may be that you get to the end of the conversation and all that's happened is that you've done a really good job being empathetic and understanding and actively listening, and you understand what they meant, and they didn't really reciprocate all that well. And maybe they don't really have the best communication skills, and that's going to happen sometimes. And if it's a situation where the relationship is valuable to you, maybe you didn't really lose anything there. You know, maybe we are coming away with a better understanding of the other person. Maybe it didn't meet all the goals that we wanted, and maybe we need to have another conversation again later to try and get there. It may take more than one. But if you've gotten to the end of that and they feel heard and understood, there may be an opening there to have a future conversation. Whereas if, on the other hand, it had been a screaming match, there might not be that opportunity. So it may be an investment in continuing the conversation. It may not get solved that day, but maybe the relationship is preserved.
Also a good reminder that most people's behaviors, I mean, really what it sounds like, Carrie, you're talking about is facilitating that humanity, and to have them, not only are you seeing it in them, but they're seeing it in you, because that's really what many beliefs do, is they separate us, the mm-hmm. other. And mm-hmm. so having these conversations is a reminder, like, all right, you're still this real person with real needs and enjoyments and desires and so on. And it is astounding when we get there, how often people's behaviors might change, even if their beliefs may not. Because if there is one continuity behind all humanity, is that we are amazingly capable of holding dissonance and saying one thing and doing another and rationalizing. So this has just been a fantastic way of, like, yeah, how do we create the space for people to be nicer, even if they still believe stupid shit?
Yes, 100% that. Yeah. I know a lot of people who believe all sorts of wacky things that mm-hmm. are friends with people who don't believe those same wacky things. And they get along because they have good interactions with each other. And
you know,
they care
just
about
because
that person.
Someone is a flat earther does not mean you get to cut them off in traffic.
That's true. Unless it's like if it's on a curve or if there's gravity involved. I don't know. I don't know how that works. I don't know what the physics are of a flat earth, but I feel like it would affect travel at certain speeds.
That's a different conversation.
It's a different conversation.
They're terrible basketball players, but great at frisbee. Just saying.
Hey.
Terrible.
I see what you did there.
Yeah.
I saw what you did too. Nice.
Yeah.
I love it. Yeah, you know, so yeah, that's how to deal with your flat earth friends and family members.
Don't
try frisbee, not basketball. Don't cut them off in traffic. Exactly. Well, awesome. That
wanna
is
go to the Q&A.
Yeah,
we're gonna move to Q&A, which I think I have not a lot of questions.
That's okay.
But I'm sure we'll have more in the hangout. So I'm going to ask the question.
The question.
Okay. What if you know it's something to be a rant? Okay. So I guess, what if you know the conversation that you're going to go into is going to turn into a rant?
Oh, like the other person wants
to
rant at you.
Yeah, the other person's just
going to
go off on, like, you know, how, you know, the Democrats are drinking Adrena McCrone.
Yeah. There's a fine line there between someone's just going to go off on a rant at you versus, you know, are they venting about something that is causing them some kind of emotional distress and we need to sit here and listen to it and, you know, build rapport and all that. If it's somebody ranting and they just want to take out their anger on you and they're not interested in respecting your dignity or having a conversation that encourages mutual understanding and respect, My recommendation would be that might be a time to disengage and say, you know what, I don't really feel like I have the emotional energy at this time to hear about what happened on the news today. I'm taking a break from that right now. Can we please talk about something else? That would probably be the best thing. Now, am I saying that I always do that? No. Sometimes I take the bait and I get provoked and I always regret it every single time. But probably the best advice there would be, yeah, if you don't expect that they have the slightest interest in having a real conversation, no, you don't have to sit there and listen to them rant about some wacky shit. No.
All right. David, do you want to ask the next question?
Absolutely.
All right.
Got, is it the one that just popped up?
No, it's the next one. But it doesn't really matter. We don't have to go in order.
Yeah. So what if it's something you've argued about in the past? How do you overcome that and do it the right way? I am adding the quotes this time.
Yeah, no, that's a great question, because I feel like a lot of times it's something that's come up over and over again. That's happened to me too. And the risk there is, yeah, that you're going to fall into the same pattern that you've done before. And you already know what the other person's going to say. You already know what you're going to say and how you're going to feel and everything like that. And that can be really, really tricky. A couple of tips I would say for that would be to start off, first of all, recognizing what's about to happen and assessing whether you're ready for that and if you're going to be able to not fall into that again, but also maybe setting some boundaries and expectations ahead of time and saying, hey, I know we've talked about this a lot of times before, you know, and it's been difficult for both of us. I really want to talk to you about this thing. And I think it would be really beneficial if we leave off this other piece of it this time, or, you know, can we avoid discussing whatever the thing is that's really triggering for you? Or, you know, can we go ahead and set some rules right now that if we get really upset and heated, I'm going to need to take a break and go take a walk for a few minutes. I don't want to get into any kind of like heated argument about this. Or whatever the thing is that continues to be the sticking point, probably the thing to do is to acknowledge that at the outset, that, hey, this is a pattern. You know, this is something we've fallen into a few times, and I don't want that because I value you as a person and as whatever your role is in my life. And I want us to be able to have a good conversation. So if we could avoid, you know, veering into the territory of, you know, whatever, the baptism, or, you know, talking about grandma or whatever the case may be, just setting some kind of ground rules ahead of time around it to let them know, I want to talk to you about this issue, but there are certain pieces of it that are a hard line for me that I don't want to go into. Or if we get to a certain point, I may have to take a break, or I'm more interested in just talking about this one piece of it, and see if you can focus it in on something that's more of a problem solving orientation. Like, hey, can we just talk about, you know, how we're going to work out the wedding invitations, or, you know, what we're going to do at the service, or something very specific and clear and focused, rather than letting it, you know, balloon into, you know, the same argument we always have about how you ruined my life about, you know, X, Y, and Z. Maybe just kind of drawing some lines around it would be my first recommendation for that. David and Helen, did y'all have any further input on that?
You know, a lot of that, I mean, if you're looking at something from the past, it's determining, mm-hmm. like, is this really, what are you wanting to solve? What's the outcome? Mm-hmm. And I get very functional and very pragmatic with a lot of this. I mean, it's so easy to delve into, well, I have to right this wrong, you know, and it's like, no, you don't. You really don't. And quite often it's just like, well, because, you know, I think, Carrie, you actually mentioned it a bit, you know, before, of going, before you start asking, is this about the other person or is it about me? Like, what am I serving here? You know, is this just because I like the sound of my voice? Is it because I get jollies out of, you know, causing people to be pissed off? Is it, you know, a sense of self-righteousness? Maybe even it's right. I mean, that's just it. Like, we can completely agree, but that's just going to come across as being unhelpful, and they're just going to dig in further. So yeah, first start with yourself. How do you want to show up? What do you want out of this?
I think also too, like, knowing your limitations is a strength, which is something I say over and over and over again, yep. because it does really, it tends to be very, very helpful in people's lives to know what you're okay with and what you're not okay with. And if you want to, you know, get your religious mom to come over to your side, good luck. But do you want to get along with your mom well enough that, you know, you can do Sunday dinner together, that, you know, they might not be 100% okay with your lifestyle, but they'll still have you and your partner over for Sunday dinner. Fine. Like, you just want to get to some kind of equilibrium that you don't feel like your life is going to be chaos with your family members or friends. I think doing that is going to serve you better than, like, well, I'm right, you're wrong, screw you. That's not going to go okay. But if you know your mom is not going to accept you and your partner or how you lived your life, then that is also a limitation that you can choose. No matter how much I try to make up points, she's going to stay stuck in the mud. And it's not your job to get her unstuck. So knowing how you want to engage those conversations, and because you know your people in your life better than anyone else, knowing your limitations is a strength, and how far you want to delve into those conversations. Because sometimes it's just going to be it's going to be like trying to nail gel to a tree. You know, like, if it's going to be an exercise in frustration, maybe not engage in those conversations in a way that is just going to be an exercise in frustration. Mm-hmm. And it can be hard. It might take you a couple of years to figure that out. So
yeah. And it's something I have found too, is, like, again, the thing that changes your mind might not be the thing that changes their mind. Like, mm-hmm. I was talking about the family member I got into that giant argument with about transphobic memes on the internet. No amount of my explaining why that was upsetting to me seemed to do anything. And then one day they read a book by a religious author that said, don't post transphobic memes because it distresses those people who were going through that, and said a bunch of other objectionable things. And for some reason that changed their mind and they're not posting those memes anymore. And I'm like, you know what? We got there in a really weird way that, you know, is not the way I would prefer, but the problematic behavior has stopped. So mm-hmm. yay.
Well, it might be the person that's not emotionally close to them. Mm-hmm. It might be there's enough distance for them to see the force from the trees that they can be like, oh, you know what, this is a bad idea I have. Mm-hmm. Whatever, like whatever gets you across the river, whether it's the bridge or the boat or you know, a jet ski, whatever it is, as long as they get over the river, they got over the river.
Yes, exactly. And you know, it doesn't have to be perfect. If it's better, maybe that's met our goal, or at least a portion of our goal. Yeah, to your point too, I think it's also, especially with, like, family interactions, and the psychologists can speak more to this than I can, but, you know, we sometimes tend to fall into these roles with our family members where, you know, it is never gonna be the case that my parents think I'm an expert on anything, regardless of, you know, whatever the objective level of our education or expertise or experience on a particular subject is. And it may be that they need to hear it from somebody who is not me. And maybe that is going to convince them better than anything I could say. And I try not to take that personally, but I do. I feel some kind of way about that. But you know what? If they hear it from somebody else and the point gets across, you know what? I'm glad that happened. I don't know. Yeah, people are people.
People are complicated.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. What else do we have?
Okay. Do you have a thought on how to break the news to someone that you've left the faith? If the basis of your relationship has been sharing the same super fundy faith. In preparing for these talks, I'm trying to gauge the line between letting them vent and tolerating the abuse. And I am very scared.
Okay. Yeah. So the first thing I would say is don't tolerate abuse. That goes back to what we talked about earlier about dignity and making sure that you are respecting other people's dignity and making sure that you are respecting your own and asking for that from other people. And if it's not happening, you're setting a line or a boundary and saying, you know what, this is not working. I need you to, you know, not speak to me in that way. Or, you know, when you say those words to me, you know, whatever the case may be that is, you know, feeling abusive to you, it is okay to say, this is not okay with me. And this part needs to stop. Having said that, I'm interested in the fact that you're interested in breaking this news to someone that you still care about, that you want to have a relationship with. And you said the basis of the relationship has always been sharing the same super fundy faith, but you no longer share that faith, but you still want to have the relationship, right? Do you think it's possible that they do too? There must be something else there, right? Like, you still want to be friends with this person, even though you don't share the same faith. Do you think that there may be some reason that they are interested in continuing to have a relationship with you too? And if so, I would want to foreground that in the conversation, you know, whether it's, you know, someone whose friendship you really value, or they're a good source of support in one way or another, or whatever the case may be. I would focus it on that. And you as people, if you've been really close and you really respect one another, enjoy one another in a lot of ways, even if maybe the setting that you were always in was religious, is there anything else there that is supporting the foundation of the relationship that you could shift to, or that you could kind of anchor onto and focus on that? Maybe, like, and I don't know, it's hard to say without further details, but if it's somebody that, you know, is a really good a good friend that you like to share, you know, your confidences with, or it's someone that you spend a lot of time talking to, or maybe it's the person that you have coffee with every other day or something like that. Is there a way that you can still have those interactions in a different setting, in a different context, without it necessarily being about the fact that you're not in the faith anymore, but just about the fact that you have a good relationship with that person? And I guess my second question would be, to what extent do they have to know this about you? I mean, obviously, I guess if this is a person that you only see in a religious context and you've left that religion, it might be necessary for you to tell them about it. But do they already know? I guess I have follow-up questions about that. And the first one is, what's your interest in maintaining the relationship? And do you think they share it? And if so, then maybe it's going to be an easier conversation than you think. But I don't know that, because it sounds like you're concerned about their potentially being abusive, which concerns me, in which case I would say, no, you don't have to put up with that. Regardless, if that's going to be how they react, it's probably not a relationship that is going to be beneficial to you if that's how they're treating you. So I hope that isn't what's happening. But yeah, if you want to give us any further detail, feel free, or we can talk about it more in the chat. But yeah, first things first, no, don't tolerate abuse. Venting is one thing, but venting is expressing how they're feeling and how they're reacting to the news. It is not attacking you or saying things that are demeaning and hurtful and harmful to you. That's not something that you need to let someone do. It's okay to say that is not acceptable to you and you're not gonna be here for it. That's
okay
on that.
David, do you want to ask the next question?
Yeah. So if you first meet someone and notice they're religious, is it okay to ask someone to not use religious terminology in conversation with you in that it makes you uncomfortable? And for that matter, can you actually have a friendship?
It probably depends on the person and the type of relationship. If it's like someone that you've just met, I don't know. That's a wild card. I don't know how they're going to react. If it's someone that you feel like you've developed a little bit of a friendship with and you want to keep having the friendship and the religious terminology is going to be something that prevents that, then yes, it's probably worth bringing up because it's going to be an impediment to the relationship and it's a relationship that you want to maintain or build. So yes, maybe bringing up something kind of like, hey, you know what? Something about me is that I've recently deconverted from my faith. I used to be, you know, this or that or whatever. I'm currently not. And because I went through some things, when I hear this or that phrase, sometimes it makes me feel some kind of way. I would feel more comfortable if we could avoid, you know, this phrase or talking about this topic. Would that be okay with you? Something like that is probably okay. And if they're like, absolutely not, this is the bedrock of my life and I'm not friends with people who don't believe this, well, okay, great, we have now eliminated this person as someone that we're going to be friends with, and that's it. If it's somebody that is actually interested in having that friendship with you, and they're willing to not make it about their religious beliefs, then yeah, absolutely. They might go, oh, okay, yeah, I'm sorry. Or they might even say, oh, you know what? Yeah, I've been thinking about that too. I actually forgot that, you know, saying bless you after somebody sneezes is a religious thing. I'll quit doing that. I think there are a lot of times, I find myself personally using religious phrases sometimes that just got like, I took them in out of habit over time, you know. Mm-hmm. We learn them through our life, like saying bless you when someone sneezes, or, you know, amen or whatever. It is entirely possible that someone is saying religious phrases and they don't even mean anything by it. It's just a habit and they might be perfectly willing to let that go. And yeah, I am with you on that one. If it's an impediment, let them know how it makes you feel. And if they're willing to not make you feel uncomfortable, great. If they're not, well, now we know that about this person and we don't have to be around them anymore.
Okay. The last question, which I'm going to modify a little, would there ever be a point that you would have to cut off a relationship with someone? Like how does someone know those limitations?
Yeah. The short answer would be yes, there are those occasions. It's going to vary based on a lot of circumstances, based on the person involved, what they're doing, how it's impacting you. Kind of going back in our relationship flowchart to step one, in particular, if it's something that's causing you harm, if what they are doing is actively causing you harm and they are not willing to stop it, that might be a sign that this is a time to exit from that situation. And whether that boundary is we're cutting off all contact completely, or whether that boundary is we are only going to communicate in this particular way about these topics, and we are going to steer clear of anything to do with this, that, or the other thing, you know, whatever that is, it doesn't have to be completely cutting off the entire relationship. Maybe it can be just putting that relationship in some parameters in which it's okay. Or maybe it actually is that this person is not willing to respect any of these boundaries. A good clue is if you are trying to set boundaries with someone and they are consistently not following through, they are consistently not doing what you're asking, consistently doing things that you have let them know are hurtful and harmful to you, and they are not stopping, that is a good clue that they're not respecting you, and you can still respect you by not being around that. So yes, The difficulty with this, I know that we talk to a lot of people about, is sometimes we're in relationships with people where it is going to cause us harm to not be in the relationship. Like if it's someone that, like, you're a minor and you live at home with your parents and you rely on them for financial support and there's nothing you can do. Okay, maybe in a situation like that, avoiding the conflict until you're able to get your resources together to move to a different situation may be the better tactic than having an explosive blow up argument where, you know, okay, we can never speak to one another again, but you're not really in a position where that is viable. Yeah, maybe trying to avoid the harm for a period of time might make more sense there. But yes, unfortunately, I think that there are sometimes people that just simply are not going to be respectful and are not willing to work with you. And it is okay to say that I'm not okay with that and I'm not going to let this happen to me. Yeah. Thoughts on that, David and Helen?
Spot on. I mean, yeah.
Yeah. And that sucks because I hate that. I am like the most conflict avoidant person ever. And I hate the idea of that kind of thing happening. And I do everything I can to not get to that point. But, you know, the problem with that is at some point you're going to such great lengths to try and give dignity and respect and second and third and fourth and fifth and 17th chances to other people. And you're not giving yourself the dignity and respect that you would expect mm-hmm. from anyone else. And that's not fair to you. And it's okay to remember you're a person too. And you also need dignity and respect. And it's okay to ask for that and let people know if they're not doing it, that they're not allowed to treat you in that way and you're cutting them off.
So what you do, Car, is you seek out conflict. And then it doesn't go well. And then you have arguments in your head of all the things you wanted to say over and over again.
Yes.
Like
yes.
What I do.
Wake up in the middle of the night going, I should have said this.
That. Yes, exactly. When you're showering in the morning, washing your hair, going, God damn it, I could have made that point and I would have won.
Yes, exactly. But we don't win conversations.
Driving, yeah. What? You're pulling a George from Seinfeld and driving all the way back to the office to recreate exactly. the situation. I mean, really, it's gas is too expensive to do this.
It really is. It really is. And you're worth being respected as much as anybody else is. Even if you Absolutely. Grew up in a belief system that told you the opposite of that and made you think that you were broken and dirty and sinful and deserving to go straight to hell, that's that belief talking. We don't have to agree with that and we don't have to internalize that. And it's okay to demand respect and dignity for yourself. So please do.
Okay. Thank you very much, my friend Cara. This was a really, really great talk. Very engaging. And like, I know we've talked about this type of stuff before, but it's always good to get more tools in our toolbox, communication, epistemology, toolbox. I'm using words and I'm stumbling Tupac? Over them.
I heard Tupac. Tupac. This is where we also. Go
rap on this? Like, oh,
going okay. back to Cali.
Recovering from Religion is a nonprofit organization whose mission it is to provide hope, healing, and support to those struggling with issues of doubt and non-belief. Hope, healing, and support is waiting for you on our website, recoveringfromreligion.org. There you can speak or chat with a trained agent who will work with you through your struggles and doubts or to help find resources that may work for you. You can also find local Recovering from Religion support groups in your area for the long-term recovery work. Resources specifically curated for those struggling with doubts, disbelief, and trauma can also be found on the RFR website. To connect with a secular therapist in your area, go to seculartherapy.org and create an account. If you'd like to support the work that RFR does, you can donate or sign up as a volunteer on the Recovering from Religion website. It's also a big help subscribing to the RFR YouTube channel, our blog, or following us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. questions, comments, and suggestions can be emailed to us at rfrx@recoveringfromreligion.org. Thanks for tuning in, and we hope you'll be with us next time on the Recovering from Religion podcast.